Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And again, Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. The suit is still in New York, handling meetings up in New York. D-Mace will be back with us tomorrow on the program.
I don't know if that's true.
Oh.
I don't think you have to wait that long, people.
Oh.
He's here.
Oh, wait.
We got D-Mace.
Uh-oh.
D-Mace is in the house.
D-Mace, let me just tell you.
Wires were crossed.
Has messed up your schedule. You need to be on the show tomorrow because Willie's out, just so you know. He's
going
to San Jose.
I kind of figured that we it was supposed to be originally today and tomorrow. But, you know, because the suit was gone to NYC, living it up big, I came in yesterday. So.
Okay.
So I don't mind talking sports with you guys.
Well, no, this is great.
It needs to be every day.
Here.
Hey.
Reach.
I think what you do is you got to do a George Costanza from Seinfeld. Just show up. Remember, he wasn't sure if he had the job. He goes, I'm just going to show up.
Actually, I think
I'm here, y'all.
D-Mace, I think Willie's actually onto something.
Exactly.
I would just show up until they just tell you to stop showing up.
I'm
or
here.
Questioning why you're here every day. But I think Willie's probably just nailed
it. It worked for Costanza. It worked.
It did.
Hey.
It did.
You know, we just need to get some penmanship to a piece of paper and we'll be good.
Yeah.
You know?
Make it official.
Exactly.
Well, all right.
Now that we got that settled.
Let me start again. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and D-Mace in the house today. Yes.
Yes. Oh, man. I was wondering, because the way you said it, I was thinking, like, he must not know I'm
Yeah, I was thinking the same. It was like.
I'm sitting left of Willie right now.
The suit told me Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
Oh, man, the suit is just. I mean, he has so much on his plate.
He's a lot.
He's trying to figure out what game he's going to at Madison Square Garden.
That's right. You know, the subway system. What train am I going to take?
Right. Right. He thought the Knicks still. He thought the Nets still played in the old
in
building.
The Meadowlands. Exactly. Yeah, he went to the Meadowlands, had to turn around and go back.
He's like, guys,
how do I get
I
to
keep
Brooklyn?
Looking for Shea. I know baseball's not playing yet, but where is Shea Stadium? I'm trying to find Shea Stadium. Where is it?
Oh, goodness. Oh, well, there you go. It's our guy, Chase.
We got a lot to get into today. We're going to talk to Terry McCormick coming up in about 10 minutes or so. He was in Indianapolis yesterday. Of course, we played John Vrabel talking with the media yesterday from the combine.
Did I say John Vrabel?
Is that his brother? Did his brother go?
Well, we played John Vrabel and Mike Robinson. Both of them spoke to the media yesterday. And so we played.
You're on
the
roll, buddy. You're on
the
roll.
See what happens when you just show up out of the clear blue sky?
Exactly. He's rattled.
I'm like all thrown off.
You rattled
it's not
the
in the script. I'm reading a script. It's not the script. Doesn't say D-Mace talks here. Somebody give me a new script.
Oh, man. You like Anchorman. Just put it on the teleprompter here. Read it.
Burgundy will read it.
Darren Burgundy.
Are we going to be able to do today? Because my script is for 4 hours with just the two of us, and now we're adding the third. How does that work?
Oh, man. I'm just telling you what my text message said like at the beginning of the week.
Should I just put pause after my lines? I just go pause?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you got to say pause, too, because it's written on a thing.
Read whatever's in there. And I think we played it yesterday. Pause.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And so we're going to get the reaction because John Robinson had quite the reaction yesterday as well. And I've had a lot of people reaching out to me from other markets going, what was that all about? Obviously, they're trying to figure out, you know, what's the lay of the land here? What's going on here? Why did the general – I mean, you don't see that from general managers much, right?
No, or not
ever,
at all.
Yeah. Or ever?
Mm-mm. And you may see it from a coach.
Is that deemed a mini breakdown? I mean, how do you – I don't even know how you label that. What is that?
Just emotion. Showing emotions.
An emotional – yeah.
Being human. Showing the care. I thought it was good. We played it.
Or it could be, you know, and you hate to say it, he realizes that was it. That was our
It was
chance.
A great shot. It was
that
a great
was
shot.
Our
and there's
chance.
Nothing wrong with that.
And
I like
everybody
that.
Else is getting better.
I like that.
Yes.
I wouldn't you rather have that reaction than something real stoic and defiant?
I mean, I don't. You know, when it comes to GMs and coaches, I really don't. Honestly, I really don't.
You don't
care.
Worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't
much.
Worry yeah, about okay. You know if they're stoic or if yeah. they're happy. It doesn't matter to me because ultimately, you know, just like a player, they want to win by all means necessary. I don't think any head coach takes a job and say, you know what, I really don't care about winning. I just want to be out here. I just want to be on television. No.
You don't make it this far.
Watch exactly. David Poyle, or actually just, yeah, watch. Don't try to talk to David Poyle on game day. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, he's like in the zone. It's like he's yeah. on the bench. It's like he's playing. Floyd Reese was the same way, man. Floyd was superstitious. I mean, you know, these guys, these uber competitive GMs, mm-hmm. just because they're not down on the field with you guys, Derek talking with mm-hmm. you or coming or in a box coming up with plays. I'm telling you, the GMs that are, you know, uber competitive, like David Poyle and Floyd Reese. And I'm not leaving John Robinson mm-hmm. out on purpose. I just never been around him in that setting. I haven't seen what he's like on game day. But, you know, they could be a hot mess, you know, so they feel the same pressures. They know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they feel pressure. Sometimes they feel pressure more than the actual players because, you know, after a while, if things are not working, they know they're on the hook for the guys that they drafted or brought in. You know, if they're not progressing fast enough, then the GM and the head coach is on the hook for that. You know? And if you go out and you get guys and they don't start producing, that might be your last GM or head coaching job. Whereas a player, he might get picked up again because it just didn't work at that particular team. You know, so, I mean, he has a lot of pressure. I think he's stepped up. You know, he's done a wonderful job since he's become the GM of the Tennessee Titans. He's taken his they've done a 180 since he's become GM and since Vrabel became head coach. Obviously, a little bit of it started with Mike Mularkey, but Vrabel has taken it, made it his own. He's ran with it along with John Robinson. So they still feel a pressure because – honestly, that might have been their one time, their shot.
You can't help but worry about that. You have to move forward and you have to prepare for next year, but there's got to be deep down if you're human mm-hmm. where you say, boy, I hope we haven't missed our best shot. We had it lined up. It's happened to a lot of teams over the years. Like, you know, think about the Utah Jazz mm-hmm. and – you know, the Phoenix Suns when they had Steve Nash. Mm-hmm. You know, they had some – there's a lot of history of great teams that
– not make –
didn't
not
quite – they had it lined up and they couldn't knock down the pins when they had a shot.
Quick story. I mean, being a second year – I think it was in my second – no, it was my third year we went to the Super Bowl. So it was 97, 98. Yeah, my third year. And when we didn't win a Super Bowl, as a young guy, I'm disappointed we didn't win, but I'm like, okay, we're going to make it. Look at all these people. Look at all these guys. They're young and they're still under.
Yeah, we'll be back.
We'll be back. But the older guys, you know, Bruce Matthews, those guys, they were breaking down. Like, and I'm looking at them like, man, we still
we'll
got
be all right.
We'll be all right. But they knew something that I didn't know, you know, is that these opportunities don't come every year.
It's so hard.
It is so hard to get there, and then when you miss it, you know, by yards or by points, it's like, man, you're devastated because, you know, this might be it for us. And I'm pretty sure that's what John Robinson is thinking. You know, that was a perfect window for us to win, at least to get to the Super Bowl. Now, once you get there, all bets are off. but at least we had an opportunity to win the AFC. Everything again, was put in place.
Again, in the script, it does not have this in here. It doesn't show that I'm supposed to play the Baby Ruth in the Punch Bowl in the first segment, but here goes. I'll play the Baby Ruth in the Punch Bowl. If I'm just being honest, you know, my other thoughts that we haven't brought up is he's feeling the heat, man. He knows this market is ticked. I want to use another word that starts with a P. This market is not satisfied. They are upset, visibly upset. This market has changed. I've been talking about this with you guys. Like, the way they feel about Ryan Tannehill has changed. It's going to be up to him to try to get them back, and he's got to play really good because a lot of people have pulled the plug. They've pulled the ripcord. And I'm not saying they've pulled the ripcord on this team. I'm saying they're ticked, and rightfully so. Look, I don't know how far. I don't know if they could have beaten Kansas City the next week. I don't know if they would have been in L.A. I don't know how it would have played out. All I know is they had no business losing to the Cincinnati Bengals that day. And I get it. The Bengals earned their stripes.
The Bengals almost won the Super Bowl. They almost won.
Willie, they got sacked 9 times. And you're not supposed to win a playoff game when you get sacked 9 times. And they got sacked 9 times. And they should have won that game at home in front of a great atmosphere. And they should have beat the Bengals, period. And Ryan Tannehill was not good. And that was just not the game for him not to be good. And they didn't win. And people are mad, and rightfully so. They should be mad. They're upset. And they're really disappointed that, like I said, I don't know what's the level of disappointment. Like, oh, my gosh, you didn't go to L.A., so that's why I'm mad? I think it's a lot of it's just hinging off of you couldn't win one playoff game as the one seed. So this franchise has now gone 0-3. In their history since being in Nashville, when they're the number one seed in the conference and hasn't been able to win a playoff game? Are you kidding me?
It hurts, man.
I think he's feeling the heat from the fan base, the media. I mean, it hasn't been soft on the Titans this offseason, and quite honestly, it's not going to be. It's going to be up to them to change the narrative next season, and really, they won't be able to change the narrative until, you know, unless they get into the playoffs, and then they can really change it. But I'm just telling you, I think he feels he knows what's been said. He knows how this market feels. And I think a lot of it was like trying to maybe soften the blow a little bit. It's a long offseason in football. And it's like, you know, and I believe John Robinson does. Of course he cares. Of course this stings. Of course this hurts. But I also think that, you know, there's a lot of this, like, gosh, I'm going to have to listen to this for 6 more months. He knows what's going on. It's not like he's oblivious to what's being said in this market. So that's my Baby Ruth in the Punch Bowl for this first segment.
Well, there it is. Now you got to get it out of the punch bowl. Start all over. Make a new batch of Kool-Aid.
Well, let's come back and let's talk with Terry. He was there in Indianapolis when this happened yesterday. There's a whole lot of things to digest with what was said yesterday that we played, and we'll get his thoughts. We'll do that on the other side as you listen to the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Derek Mason with you, Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Terry, I had a couple of texts from people who cover their NFL teams in their market this morning. Had a couple yesterday, and it was all the same theme, wondering what's going on with the general manager. What was that all about? Because I understand, typically, you don't see that kind of emotion out of a general manager, right? I mean, you're just not going to see a moment like that. You were there. What did you make of it?
Well, I think it was just John Robinson, you know, just kind of baring his soul. You know, I think showing the appreciation and, you know, how deep this franchise runs in his blood. I think probably the fact that he's a native of Tennessee, he's from Union City out in northwest Tennessee, that probably has a lot to do with it. And I think, you know, just his desire to try to bring a Super Bowl and bring the Lombardi Trophy here to Nashville has been his overriding thing. And when that got derailed unexpectedly against the Bengals, I think, you know, it hit everybody hard. And I think it hit everybody hard in that organization from the top on down.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like this was the Wednesday after the Saturday loss, right? It's not like that Saturday night game, and then this is his reaction on Wednesday. He's basically hasn't been anywhere. I mean, he hasn't spoken, to my knowledge, or barely spoken since that loss. That's been some time now. You're a little surprised. I mean, this is a month and a half later.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by it, but I think, you know, John Robinson is, you know, just, I think that shows just how deeply invested he has become in this team and in this organization. I think it's a situation where he wants, you know, so desperately to take this organization to the top. And I think that the reality is that they blew a golden opportunity to do just that this year. And as Derek will tell you, there's no guarantee that you get back. There is absolutely no guarantee that you get back to that point next year or the year after. It starts over from scratch, and that's probably what hurts as much as anything.
What did you make of Mike Vrabel's reaction yesterday, or the way he was yesterday? By the way, he's been doing, you know, interviews. I saw him on NFL Network today. I mean, he seems quite jovial.
Yeah, he's been making the rounds. You know, Vrabel is kind of a unique personality. He can be gruff and abrasive and, you know, very antisocial toward the media when there are questions he doesn't like, when he wants to be. But he can also be very jovial and very, you know, congenial and, you know, laugh and cut up. I think probably the fact that there's no game to prepare for 6 months might be one of the best things that put him in a good mood, because he is so intense when it comes to his preparation throughout the week and on game day. I think that, you know, maybe he lets the other side of his personality come out in the off season when he doesn't have all that on his plate.
Yeah, clearly I've lived in the South long enough, because I said, you know, jovial. It's like Louisville, Shelbyville.
Shelbyville.
Rather than jovial, I'm now going jovial. Shelbyville. So now you know I've lived in the South, been here 25 years. So he just wasn't even jovial, Terry.
Yeah.
I can't even say jovial anymore, because that's how long I've been living in the South.
Oh, have you started to say y'all yet, Terry?
No, I have not. I have not. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to go to Shelbyville and be a little bit jovial today. What? Let's see. Let's go back to John Robinson and some things he was asked about with players. Okay, he was asked about Julio Jones. Look, we're all trying to interpret what everybody's saying, right? So, what was your interpretation of his comments on Julio Jones?
Well, I think it's probably about 50-50 if Julio Jones is back, because they do have cap problems. They do have, you know, he does have a fairly high cap number. He was injured a lot last year. He basically said this, that Julio Jones did everything that they could have asked him to do as a professional in terms of, you know, the way he handled himself in the locker room with his teammates, with his preparation for games. Julio Jones's problem was he couldn't stay healthy. And, you know, that's now 2 years in a row, his last year in Atlanta and now this past year with the Titans. And so the evaluation on Julio Jones may be this. It may be, are you confident that Julio Jones can get past this injury and be healthy and contribute next year? If you are, you probably find out a way to keep him. If you think this is a chronic situation that's going to crop up, you know, every little bit from, you know, from now till Julio Jones is done as a player, then you probably move on from it. So that's the determination in my mind that they've got to make about Julio Jones. Are they confident that the injury was just a soft tissue thing, that he's going to get past it, or do they feel like it's something more and it's something that's going to bother him and not make him worth the investment?
What about Harold Landry? When you heard the comments on Harold Landry, do you feel good that he's going to be back, or you're going, oh, that didn't sound like a ringing endorsement?
I think Harold Landry will be back. You know, he didn't rule out putting the franchise tag on Harold Landry if he needed to. So I think there's a real good chance that if they can get their house in order cap-wise in terms of having a little bit of money to spend and being able to clear some things off the books that they've got to move on from, I think I feel pretty confident that they will make every effort to keep Harold Landry, because it's not that Harold Landry was the second coming of Lawrence Taylor, but Harold Landry is a good, solid player. And when you put pieces around him that emerged the way Jeffrey Simmons did and the way DeNico Autry did, it showed, you know, what Harold Landry could do, because now everything was not focused on Harold Landry like it had been the last 2 years. He was free to have a lot of one-on-one matchups, and he wreaked havoc and took full advantage of that. So, you know, while you're hoping that somebody doesn't come in and just say, yes, we'll throw top dollar at Harold Landry and take him away. You're hoping that to pay him fair market value for what he is, which is probably the second or third best pass rusher on the team.
This question is for Willie. So John Robinson at the end, I believe, was asked about Darrington Evans. I know. I should have alerted Elijah to do the who sounder. Was his very short and brief answer because Darrington Evans, as I've said the last couple of years, is a ghost?
Who?
Or thank you. Or it sounds like he is pulling the ripcord on Darrington Evans. What did you make of his brief comments on Darrington Evans?
That kind of became the fact that somebody from out of town asked that question kind of became the running joke of the press corps, of the locals that were up there. You'll be Jim Wyatt, John Glennon, Paul Kaharsky. It kind of became the running joke. Like, really? Somebody asked about Darrington? Did somebody use the 15-minute window that he had, you know, to answer questions? Somebody threw a Darrington Evans question out there. That's kind of, you know, that was kind of our reaction to it.
Well, but I mean, what did you make of how he answered it?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much the same way that Mike Vrabel answered
Evans,
the question on Darrington Evans back when he was first placed on IR and just said, he's not done enough. I'm like, okay, there's enough of that. So, you know, he answered that question back in September, and nothing has changed. Apparently, Darrington Evans might not want to take out a long-term lease in Nashville. He might want to rent month to month as he enters training camp next year.
D-Base, is your house for rent?
I'm renting.
Got a little sublet.
I'm renting for a couple of months. Would he can have like it after I'm done.
Would you like a roommate until your
definitely
house
not.
18 is built?
Definitely not. If it ain't my kids, probably not. No.
Can you imagine if your kids came over? Dad, hey, who's in my room? That's Darrington Evans.
Darrington Evans, and they go,
they're like, who?
What's he doing? Oh, he's getting treatment for his hamstring. He's in there resting.
You know, you know, with the Titans. Who? No,
you've
seriously.
Never,
he plays. He's on the Titans roster. Who?
Who?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they would be thinking. Like, who you got in our bedroom, Dad? Seriously.
All right, we'll regather ourselves. We'll come back. More with Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. On the other side, the DDC, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
We're back talking with Terry McCormick, talking to him about the Tennessee Titans and the combine and what the next steps are for the Titans this offseason. Terry, you brought up something. You said something interesting when you were talking with answering Darren's questions, and it was about Harold Landry. And what piqued, you know, what made my ears stand up was you said, well, he's able to beat single blockers now because he has Jeffrey Simmons and Bud Dupree. Well, that made me think the guys that are making upwards of $17, $18, $19, $20 million, T.J. Watt, Joey Bosa, Barrett, those guys can beat double teams. They don't need to always be single blocked, because if that was the case, they would never get a sack because they're basically always double teamed. So if that is indeed the case, why am I going to pay him $18 million and he can't beat a double team?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think that, you know, John Robinson said they would do everything they could to try and keep Harold Landry, but I do think there's a limit to it, Derek. I agree with you. I think, you know, I think Harold Landry is a good player, and mm-hmm. I think we saw him have a really good year. But I don't think anybody that watches the Titans and watches football would say that he was the primary disruptor on that line. I think it was because Jeffrey Simmons was the primary disruptor, and also because, you know, Bud Dupree was hurt most of the year, so we'll take him out of the equation. And I think also the fact that DeNico Autry came on and gave them another force in that defensive front. So I think what they would like to do ideally is get Bud Dupree fully healthy, keep Harold Landry, and be able to have that front four, because as you know, with any position group, you know, you have to have that cohesion and you have to gel. And those guys did gel this year, and they you know, and it showed in their performance on the field. So while Harold Landry is not the most important cog in that defensive front, he's still a very important piece of what they do. And I think that just for continuity's sake, they would probably maybe even overpay just a little bit to keep Harold Landry, to keep that group intact, rather than have to roll the dice and go out in free agency and sign a lesser guy, or, you know, spend a third round pick on somebody and hope that that guy pans out.
Well, John also said that while he was talking about Harold Landry yesterday, he did allude to, hey, listen, we know that we got other guys down the line that we need to sign. And I took that as, I can't give all my money to him because I know Jeffrey Simmons is coming up in 2 years. And we don't want to be stuck in a situation where we can't play our best player. I think Jeffrey is the best player on the team. If they can't pay him because they paid Harold Landry, I think that's what John Robinson is thinking too. I can't overpay for this guy when I got to start negotiating with Simmons next year.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right on that front. And also, I'll throw another name at you too. A.J. Brown's mm-hmm. contract is up in 22, and you cannot let that guy get out the door either. You've got to keep that guy and extend him. He's basically the best receiver they've had since you laced up the cleats.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Terry. Go ahead, Terry. Sorry, finish.
I mean, you've got to keep Simmons. You've got to keep Brown, because both of those guys are the types of players you can build a franchise around. Harold Landry, like you said, a good player, a good piece, but I don't think you can break the bank for him. It's a similar situation to what we saw last year with Corey Davis. Would you agree?
Yeah, good player, but you don't want to overpay for him.
Exactly. They let the Jets overpay for him, and it proved to be the right move. Mm-hmm.
Do you think if they tag him, he could play at the tag for 1 year? Basically saying, okay, maybe I'll get his last best year, and then we'll let him go. Do you think they could squeeze him in at the franchise number? Or do you think, Terry, they would have to make a deal, or they could tag him and then trade him? That would be the other option for Landry.
Yeah, I could see them putting the tag on him and getting one more year out of him. And then, you know, if it doesn't work out, if he doesn't have as good a year, you walk away from him. If he does, you try to extend him to something that's a little more cap-friendly, that still gets him his money on the front end, but, you know, gives you some wiggle room under the cap. You know, to me, that would probably be a wise move if you could make that happen. Now, they are snug against the cap. They're going to have to make some hard decisions on some players. You know, we talked about Julio Jones earlier. You know, they may have to make a hard decision on guys like even a Taylor Lewan or a Roger Saffold. So there are going to be some tough decisions. You know, Zach Cunningham came in, played well, but he's scheduled to make $10 million in base salary this year. I don't know that you want to pay that for an inside linebacker who might come off the field some on third downs. So,
but there is no vibe, Terry, at all that they are in love. I know Valentine's Day is past, but they're in love with Cunningham. Every time they talk about him, it's glowing.
Oh, I mean, he played really well for them. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. He's a good player, you know, a very good player. But, you know, can you pay him? Is he $10 million to Monty Rice's, you know, $800,000?
Exactly. That's the thing.
Is he that much better? That's the question.
I think it's a good question. Terry McCormick with us. Terry, now this is where we're going to rely on you for being there and reading the room. Derek and I were sitting here yesterday and interpreting the Ben Jones comments that Mike Vrabel made, just gushing about him. And then coupling that with what John Robinson said of, you know, we'd kind of like to keep the vibe we got was tried to like to keep this offensive line together if we can't. But this gets back to these tough decisions that are coming one way or the other. I was listening to Joe and Robbie this morning, and Joe's interpretation was this is the writing on the wall. This is the sayonara. We love you. We appreciate everything you've done, but we're just not going to be able to bring you back. Well, how did you read it?
Yeah, I could see it being, you know, interpreted that way as a eulogy almost for Ben Jones at his time.
Because it was, I mean, he really laid it on thick as a person, as a pro. I mean, he couldn't say anything nicer about him. But I guess I misread it. I thought that was, hey, we got to make a push to keep this guy. We need this guy. But it could be interpreted the opposite. Hey, we love this guy, but there's just no way we can bring him back.
Well, I think it's all going to hinge on what they do with the other guys. I mean, I don't, you know, I'll put it this way. Would they like to have the offensive line intact and back? You know, they did say that Dylan Raidens is, you know, a candidate to be a starter this year. You know, he said he's got a lot of work to do. He's got to develop. But they acted like they wanted him to come into camp and claim a starting role. Now, is that at right tackle where David Quisenberry is more suited to be a backup? Is that at left guard because they're going to be forced to cut Roger Saffold? Who knows? Who knows which one that's going to be? I don't think Dylan Raidens is their next left tackle. I just don't think he's, you know, equipped to play that position down in and down out for 17 games. So there's some hard decisions that have got to be made regarding Saffold and Lawan, and what they do there might determine what direction they go with Ben Jones. Because if they have to cut one of those guys to get under the cap, and I would assume if they were going to cut one, it would probably be Saffold, because you could plug Raidens into that spot. And Saffold, I think, is 33, whereas Lawan is 30 or 31. So he's a couple of years older. Then you might want to sign Ben Jones back if you can get him at the right price, simply for the fact that you're keeping most of that offensive line intact. I don't think with a 33, 34-year-old quarterback and a team that relies heavily on the running game with Derrick Henry as they do, I don't think you want to overhaul the offensive line and let three or four pieces of it go out into free agency and have to retool that in one offseason.
This, again, comes down to the wheel of fortune. When you win a certain amount of cash and then you go shopping, you know, you want to have all these things, but you have to work within your budget to select what you want. John Robinson, I'm not sure I got a whole lot of clues. We had fun at Darrington Evans' expense, but the other two guys with Hilliard and Foreman, they asked about them. He said, yeah, love what they did, but I'd never heard him really say, we're going to make a pitch. You couldn't really read which guy they want to go after. I don't think they have room for both, do they?
I don't think they do either, and I think somebody will make a run at Deontay Foreman and give him some money and a chance to compete as a starter. You know, now, ideally, I would love to see them bring Deontay Foreman back, because now that Derrick Henry has been dinged, that he's been injured, you know, you don't know if he's still going to be Superman like he was before the injury. Maybe he will be. Maybe he'll go out and run for 1,600 yards this season and everything will be, you know, wonderful, good, and great like it was before, and he'll be able to carry the ball 300 times. Who knows? But there's just as good a chance that he won't be able to do that, that he's going to be a more of a mortal in terms of his play and his performance, because, one, he is coming off the injury. He is a little bit older. You know, running backs don't generally last very long, you know, after one contract. So, you know, you might need a little insurance at that position. It's already pretty much been well documented that they can't count on Darrington Evans to be that insurance. And Deontay Foreman would be a really nice insurance policy if they could get him at the right price.
All right, you on the way out, you wanted to say something to us?
I did. I wanted to ask you, with baseball being in limbo now, and you guys are all about close enough to my age that I know you probably watched the original version of it. And with Jeff Fisher involved, did you watch the USFL when it was out in the 80s? Will you watch this new version? Who was your team back in the day?
Oh, this is easy. Yeah. My answer is yes, absolutely. And my team was the Philadelphia Stars.
That was my team, the Philadelphia Stars. Chuck Buscina.
Yep, that was my team.
That would be a resounding yes for me. And, I mean, Michigan guy, we had the Michigan Panthers. So, Anthony Carter, A-Bear, Bobby A-Bear. So, you know.
Whit Taylor, the former Commodore quarterback.
And they had the running back from Minnesota. He went to University of Minnesota. What was his name? Vaughn, I think that was his last name.
Boy, you got me on that one. That's a good one.
Got me on that one, yeah.
Man, what was his name? I forget his name. But he went to the University of Minnesota.
Look, I have Jeff Perlman's book that he wrote on the original USFL, and one of the best 30 for 30s, Who Killed the USFL?
No
there are some
doubt.
Hilarious stories from that. I watch it all the time. Of course, I was the guy. Orlando, moved to Orlando. We didn't have any team, so we got a USFL team. The Orlando Renegades, coached by Lee Corso. Lee Corso was the coach of the Renegades.
Nice.
They went 5-13. Not so fast, my friend. Maybe 6-12. Maybe 6-12.
You know, that's not a recipe for staying power when you're in a startup league.
But, you know, it was an expansion team, so we were patient. We thought big things were coming. And then
all the teams were expansion teams.
We were ready to build. We were ready to build the big thing in the Citrus Bowl. Come on. Remember, you know, here's a quarterback. This is a name that only if you were a fan of the 70s NFL and you had the football cards. They had the backup quarterback from the Bucks. Jerry Goldstein was their quarterback.
Oh, wow.
He was bad. He was never great in the NFL, and then sometimes you thought, well, you know, maybe he'll do better in the USFL. Nope. Didn't do so well.
I guess the answer
when that team was the Washington Federals, I think Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam was on their roster.
I think that's right. I think he did play in the USFL briefly. Joe Gibb. I think he was in Washington. I saw a preseason game in my hometown on my high school field. The New Jersey Generals with Herschel Walker and the Washington Federals, and I can't remember who was there. Joe Gilliam might have been playing in that game for all I know. I was down on the sideline. I was picking up people's hip pads and stuff, gloves, whatever I could get my hands on. I was like, this is a pro player, man. I did get Herschel's autograph, too. That was a big thrill.
Nice.
So I don't know, to answer the question. I don't know if that makes me I'm going to watch.
When do they start? I mean, I haven't looked into it.
Middle of April.
Well, they're being sued now. So from somebody from the original USFL.
Ooh.
So they're trying to get an injunction to stop the season until they can work out whatever they need to work out. So it's supposed to start at the end of this month. But you don't know now.
It's hard, Terry, if as we wrap this up, it's hard because we've seen these leagues just – they come and they go so quick. It's just hard. I mean, I think we would love for another alternative in the spring to stick. We know people will watch, but unfortunately, you know, it's kind of like talking about a pro basketball team, not in the NBA, coming to Nashville. It's like if they announce that again, is anybody going to trust it? I mean, with the experiences we had in this market – with ABA, like, nobody's going to trust it. It's like, how do you trust these startup leagues?
Exactly. But, you know, I think the one thing, you know, that is probably a good idea that they're trying it this way, reviving those names, because people our age, we remember the Philadelphia Stars and the Michigan Panthers and the New Jersey Generals and all that.
It's going to pull at your heartstrings.
Yeah. Whereas if you, you know, like the XFL, they put a team here or there, it's like, well, I don't know anything about that. I don't have any allegiance to that. So I think that's the one thing that maybe they can bank on, that and the fact that they're owned by Fox, which has deep, deep, deep pockets.
Yep. Terry, appreciate the visit. Thanks as always. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. He was in Indy yesterday getting the reaction from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour next. Back here on the DDC, don't forget us at ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's the Nashville home of NASCAR. Vroom, vroom. This Sunday at 1:30. Bet Chase's ears just perked up when he heard me say that. It's the Pennzoil 400 in Las Vegas. Don't forget Chasing Checkers Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Good stuff from Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Wilson County.com. We've got a text from Heidi from Dixon on our text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Can't pay the whole D line. Improve the rest of the team. Paying Bud, that means Bud Dupree, I'm assuming, means he should be healthy. And now he can replace Landry's production. What do you make of that?
I mean, you can say that, yes, but I think they play off of one another. I don't think neither one of these guys can consistently beat a double team. Again, both of them are really good players, but if you have one and you don't have the other, I think you will see the production go down with the guy that's there. If they had Bud but don't have Landry, Bud's production goes down. It's on the flip side. If Bud's not there but they have Landry, I think Landry production goes down. So I think they play well off of one another. Neither one of them are Bosa, Watt, Barrett, guys like that, you know, even if I put two guys on you, they're going to find a way to collapse the pocket and get to you. So
this is what I see. And you just heard Terry talking about it. It's because I don't know. I've heard this from many different media people. I'm not Vin Marino. You know, Vin Marino's the guy that's got to actually get the numbers and all the plan A, plan B, plan C, get the strategy with John Robinson. This is what they've been doing now for weeks, right? Mm-hmm. What if we get this guy? When could we cut this guy? You know, saving money on the dead cap, doing it before or after a certain date. There's all these things that can change the money part. But in my mind, I think you tag Landry. I have a hard time from what you said, Derek. I agree 100%. I'm not sure he's the guy you invest long-term in. As good as he is, he's in a great spot because there's going to be a lot of money for his services, just like there was for Bud Dupree. And they've made that big investment in Bud Dupree. I would love to tag him and then wait and see. Let's do all the other stuff we've got to do for the roster. If I can keep him for another year at that money, that tag price, $18 million, whatever it is, and I can make it work, great. If I got to a point where I was thinking, you know what, there's other things that I've got to do here, then you could take that tag, you still own his rights, and then you could wheel him to another team and get some more value back. Maybe even a veteran player plus a draft pick, something like that, to a team that's like, you know what, if he had hit the market, we were going to jump all in, so let's just trade for him. I don't know. It seems to be a viable option. I just don't know if they can squeeze it in. I think they're trying to send those signals.
Yeah. I was going to go there, so I'll just read the text because this is where I was going next. And this is no name on the text. Try to leave your name.
No name.
So we give you credit. Any confidence or optimism in Rashad Weaver? Now, they do have that in their back pocket. The tough part is what little they've seen, they really like. And everybody loved the draft pick. But he got hurt before they ever got started. So it's impossible to know really what he's going to bring to the table, right? Like, there's just the body of work that we can look at right now is so incredibly small. There's no idea on what he's going to look like through the course of 17 games. If he's going to hold up, you know, what his impact will be. Everything was great after they drafted him. There was a lot of glowing remarks about him after the draft. A lot of glowing remarks in training camp. But we have no idea what Rashad Weaver. Now, some of this you have to project, right? Mm-hmm. If you're talking about a big contract for somebody else and you may have to move on, then you have to get in a room and project, is this the guy that can replace his production? Is this the guy that we have on the cheap? What was Rashad Weaver, a fourth-round pick? Right? I mean, he's on the cheap.
Yeah.
Is he a guy that can even come close to a Harold Landry production, or can we get it from him and somebody else that's not even close to Harold Landry's salary?
That's the question. Just same thing with the Zach Cunningham proposal that Terry put out there. Zach Cunningham at about $10 million or Monty Rice at less than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
What is more valuable to your – what's the better play for your roster, and what could you do with that extra money to – improve the rest of it? Or could you get, there's the other value, could you get him to take less money? Could you rework his deal?
I mean, if you can get him to take less money, that'd be great. But I think they're also looking at this. they look at the effects that Jeffrey Simmons has on the whole D-line. Meaning, okay, if we don't sign Harold back and we put Weaver in, because of the effects that Jeffrey has, will Weaver be able to do what Harold did? You see, because he's going to be facing a lot of one-on-ones.
That's where your scouts really got to be able to tell you.
Exactly. So,
how do you know? He got injured so early. Mm-hmm. How can you know? You don't really have that much on Weaver, right?
Well, but from what you've seen, you really like. And you're projecting, okay, when he's healthy, younger, Jeffrey Simmons, the effects he have on everybody on that defensive line, can we get away with, if we can't sign Harold or sign him to a one-year deal to the untag, can we get away then with playing Weaver a little bit more if he's healthy?
We will come back. This discussion will continue on throughout the course of the show. But when we come back, the women are in town at Bridgestone Arena, and the Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper will join us to begin the second hour of the program. That is next.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.